Hello, this is Tom Pacello, the ROI guy, and welcome to the Evolvers podcast, sponsored by sales enablement platform provider MediaFly. Our mission is to provide you with the independent insights, community advice, and tools to guide your sales, content, and value enablement journeys and fuel your professional evolution. My guest today is Scott Ingram. He's the host of the Sales Success Stories and Daily Sales Tips podcasts. He's the author of three books, Sales Success Stories, B2B Sales Mentors, and Finding Sales Success on LinkedIn. He's also a quota-carrying sales professional working for the professional services company Relationship One, and he is an account director for them. Scott lives with his wife and two daughters in Austin, Texas, where he hosts the Sales Success Summit each October. Evolvers, please, a warm welcome for Scott Ingram.
Thanks, Tom.
Like me, I know you were probably on the road quite a bit a year and a half ago, and I know your daughters are probably really happy that you're not out on the road still. Wanted to kind of see, are you liking this sell from home situation that we're in? And when are you looking to get back on the road for in-person meetings?
Yeah, great question. I mean, there's certainly pros and cons. I traditionally spend 30 to 40% of my time on the road, but I have spent the last, 10 years working from home. So the work from home remote office situation isn't new or different. The biggest change is just the travel. I think my wife primarily would like me to be out of the house a little bit more than I am. A little bit of absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? And there's been a little too much presence in that way. You know, the next trip, the first trip that I have booked after, you know, 15 months of not going anywhere, I will be flying from Austin to Atlanta for the Outbound conference in Atlanta. And I can't wait. I mean, I'm so looking forward to just being with people. Last couple of weeks, I had a dinner meeting with a big group of folks, and it started to feel a little bit more normal and, you know, like back to old times. Just great to share a meal. I think the balance is going to land somewhere in the middle. I think not traveling like that is way more efficient. I get a lot more done when I'm just not nearly as efficient on the road. You know, when you're in between planes and hotels and all planes, trains, and automobiles and all the other travel, I think you take a productivity hit, but I'm not sure that I'm as effective. There's so many little things that are missed when you're not in person. Principally, I'll say two things. One is just being able to bring all of your key stakeholders together in one room, to have a whiteboard, to collaborate and really dig in deep together. I find that just takes a lot more work virtually. The other thing that's missing is just the more personal nuance, all the hallway conversations, the coffees, the meals, the more relational things, because sales at the end of the day is a very personal, human, emotional thing. Mm-hmm. And I find that it's a lot harder to get to those places when we're just in Zoom. And ironically, I find I get closer there just on the phone, you know, taking away the pressure of we've got to pretend like we're looking at each other in Zoom when we're actually looking at our cameras and all of that weirdness. You just kind of find your way through. So at the end of the day, I don't know, it's maybe netted out where, you know, the efficiency overall makes up for the lack of effectiveness. But we'll probably land somewhere in the middle back over time. And one of the places that I think we're going to see it first, while everybody's still navigating this, how often are we going back to the office? Are we going back to the office? Are we going to be in the office at the same time? Is that going to be intentional? Like, how's all that going to work? And are we even going to let these salespeople in the door? You know, are we comfortable with that yet? But I do think the event space is going to come back maybe faster because it's more of an opt-in type of a model, right? If you look at the folks that are going to be at Outbound, if you look at the folks that are going to be coming to my Sales Success Summit in October, they're able to choose and decide, hey, am I comfortable with this? And I think those of us who've made that choice, who've gotten vaccinated and have done what we can do to protect ourselves are probably going to overcompensate in just the fun and the excitement of being able to see each other because we've taken it for granted the whole rest of our careers.
I'll tell you, Scott, I won't miss those long trips for that hour introductory meeting.
No.
Or, you know, those trips where you're going and you're doing one big, maybe co-creation, collaborative, creative meeting that you know you can't do remote. And then you're filling the rest of the week with those kind of ancillary meetings that could easily be done remote. I think that that has helped my productivity, kind of getting those out of the system. Mm-hmm. But just like you're saying, missing those whiteboarding sessions where getting everyone together in a room and reaching agreement through a creative, collaborative, you grab a marker, I grab a marker sessions, that's very difficult to do via virtual. Even though we might have virtual whiteboards, there might be collaborative solutions that can be set up. In a 13-inch monitor, it's really hard to read the room, to get everyone's input, to make sure everyone is involved and engaged in those bigger sessions, I think is a challenge. And bonding doesn't occur the same way. I think you're spot on with that. And I do think that networking is another one where, you know, LinkedIn is definitely a valuable tool. And shoot, you wrote a book on LinkedIn sales success. But I think that it is a sad substitute for being able to network in person.
No question. I mean, at the end of the day, I think if the pandemic has taught us anything, it is that humans are social creatures. Mm-hmm. We need to, it's physiological. We have to be together, looking each other really in the eyes. And you know, just have that opportunity to press flesh, to share meals, to exchange, just I don't know, I want to say inner dialogue, but you know, it's you just go to a deeper place that is so much harder to get to from a virtual perspective.
Yeah. So I think those dinner meetings, those lunch meetings, the casual bonding, I think those become really essential to continue going as well. So it couldn't.
Yeah, but to your point, I think we are going to be a lot more selective and judicious about that, right? Because we're going to see the value of not doing that stuff, right? So it's hopefully we all end up in a place where we're a lot more intentional about where it really does and doesn't make sense to be making those time and travel investments.
Now, really popular during the pandemic, I think it accelerated the success of podcasting like Evolvers, like your podcast, Sales Success Stories, Daily Sales Tips podcast. One of the things I loved is you recently turned some of these sales success stories into a book. Tell me a little bit about the book. I think you looked at what was the magic formula to get, you know, a top 1% sales professional, what it takes to produce them. Tell me a little bit about how you put the book together. And then what are the characteristics that you found out of all these interviews that you compiled that constitute a top performer?
Sure. Well, it's probably helpful if I give a little bit of context for anybody who's not familiar with the Sales Success Stories podcast that started this. So on that show, that's about a 4.5-year-old show, I only interview active quota carrying individual contributors, and they have to be either the outright number one top performer, or I joke, but it's not really a joke, I'm willing to settle for the top 1%, because every now and then I'll talk to somebody at Microsoft that's number 3 on a team of 800. And I call that close enough.
Yeah.
So the book really came out of a hotel room conversation. Ironically, I was coming off of a conference, found somebody locally who met that criteria, and we were able to get together in the same room and do an interview together. And as I was sharing that background with him and telling him a little bit about why I started the show, because I've consumed so much of this content, but very little of it comes from people who are at the top of their game right now. Mm-hmm. And he made a comment along the lines of, well, that's because those of us who are in this position don't have time to write a book. And I took that as a personal challenge. I went, okay, hang on. If we involve enough people, many hands make light work, and we can together pull this book together. Now, I've done enough of this type of work from a content perspective to know that I would have been doomed if I tried to take the podcast interviews, transcribe them, and turn them into a book. The way we speak and the way we write are two very, very different things. So I went back to a number of my podcast guests, asked them to participate in the book, and they purpose wrote the stories for the book. And then we went back to audio. Then I asked them to record their own stories in their own voice so that you could get that inflection and you could hear all 20 different voices as we put the audiobook together. So the themes that came out of the book, the way we ended up organizing the stories was into four kind of categories. And I think this is instructive. The first was mindset. Second was relationships. The third was sales process. And the fourth was sales career. So kind of high level on each of those, being a top sales performer always, always, always starts with the mindset. And one of the most consistent mindset pieces I see is they will often look at their quota, chuckle to themselves, set the bar for themselves at 2 to 3 times that number, and then build a plan to get there. And that way, even if you miss, 180% isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Right. And some overachieve. I just did an interview on Memorial Day with a gentleman who did 331% of his number. So, you know, you get both sides of that. So that's a core piece. The relationships is also really critical. And I think it's more than what people think of. I think it actually ties back to one of my favorite Harvard Business Review articles of all time. And in fact, I have a short link for it because I reference it so much. If you go to top1.fm/HBR, you'll get to this article, and it's about better sales networks. And what they talk about in this article is when we think of a sales network, we often think of the quote unquote Rolodex, right? Who are the relationships that Scott brings to the table that's going to help us create opportunities and where he can kind of walk us in the door and do those types of things? And yes, that's certainly a component. But if we look at the broader impact of relationships on sales success, it's more about, you know, sales is a team sport. And so it's all of the relationships that you're managing inside of your organization, right? Because, and I'm not going to get this quote quite right. This last interview I just did, Sid mentioned something about the experience that the customer has with the company is basically a direct reflection of the relationships that he has inside of the company to bring value to that client. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a really, really key piece. And then it's the deeper, broader relationships that you have with other clients in the space, so that when it's time to get a reference call or to get a referral to walk you into a new opportunity, it's all of those things. And you don't get those things unless you've done a great job of serving your customers. So there's a huge servant leadership kind of underlying theme that happens through all of this. And then the last piece is having great support networks. And I think we're gonna talk a lot about just learning from what other people are doing, right? So when you're the number one top sales performer, by definition, you don't have any other peers inside of your own company. Right. So where do you go? You have to find and create community outside of that. And that's really what I've sought to do with the sales success community is mm-hmm. how do we learn from each other, learn from the best of the best. And I was actually afraid the first time I did the summit, I thought this is dangerous. This could be just this massive ratcheting up of egos, and this thing could get out of control. And the opposite happened. Everybody kind of walked into that room and realized, hey, I'm the best in my company, but I'm not confident that I'm the best person in this room. Mm-hmm. And this level of humility kicked in, and everybody just took the opportunity to go, I'm going to learn. This is my opportunity to get even better, which again, kind of ties back to that mindset of even though you're at the top of the game, there's always another level. There's always another gear. And it's kind of that constant learning process to get there. And then the last two pieces are, there's always a sales process. There's a lot, you have to have some type of process and system that you run and execute. And for me, this isn't just a quote unquote sales process. It's really a life process. How do you manage your time? How do you stay productive? How do you do all of these things that make up your success and stay grounded and all of those things? And then the career piece, I think there's an element of this that you kind of control your luck by picking the right places. You know, one of the things I'm fond of saying is there's a lot of belief that comes into this. And one of those beliefs that you have to have is a belief in your product, a belief in your solution, a belief in your ability to serve and help your customer. Because if you don't have that, we all have kind of this sixth sense that tells us there's something off here. Mm-hmm. You know, and if that's coming into play, you're just not going to have that level of success. So it's finding something that you are passionate about, that you know can make a difference, that is in a strong organization that is investing in the sellers and their processes and giving them the tools and giving them the education. And it's also a huge amount of finding the right leader and the right leadership team to work with, because I'm pretty confident. I've done 120 of these interviews. I don't think I have ever talked to a number one top performer who is number one despite their manager. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a symbiotic relationship. Right? They're sales is too hard with all the things we have to manage to also have to manage a horrible leader. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, I agree. And you'll see many of these top sellers follow the leadership as they elevate in their careers, and they go company to company, making those groups successful and being top performers company to company they go to, which is just.
And it ties back to the relationship, and that serves both mm-hmm. parties. That's how those leaders are able to stay consistent and have great performance, because they know that they can draw great talent to them. And then those sellers, you get into this great working dynamic. My current boss, now this is the first time he has been my direct boss, but this is the third company we've worked at together, and I recruited him to be my boss.
Nice. So we talked a little bit about the changes that have occurred and how they've impacted us individually. Then we talked about these kind of success factors, which a lot of ways seem immutable in terms of their laws, right? They're things that you would expect. Nothing too unexpected there. How have any of these characteristics changed, or different aspects of them been amplified with how much the buyer has changed and accelerated some of the trends we were seeing there with regard to digital selling, more stakeholders, more scrutiny? The selling environment certainly has changed. A lot of these folks were doing in-person meetings predominantly because I'm sure they're managing big deals, big accounts. Now they're virtual. Are you seeing any of these practices or any of these capabilities, certain ones amplified, that you think could be a good focus for folks to get a handle on or to amplify in their own practice? Or are you seeing any changes in these practices with the crisis?
Yeah, I think amplify is a great word, right? Because what I have seen is that the top performers have continued to be top performers, and sometimes it's actually accelerated their success. And here's why. And this for me was the biggest kind of stereotype smashing experience that I had over the course of just learning from all of these conversations in the podcast, is I had a false belief that a lot of the top salespeople were just in it for themselves. They would run over their mother if they needed to win a deal and be at the top and succeed. And what I have found is the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. One of the most consistent things that I see is it is those sellers who care the most about their customers and their success, even when those things are contrary to their own interests. But they tend to just win massively in the end, because again, it's that sixth sense thing. Like, that comes through. People know that, okay, Scott's not just doing this because of the commission check. He doesn't have commission breath. Instead, he's really trying to help me, even if he's telling me, sorry, we're not the right fit, why don't you go talk to this other company? I had to do that with Slack not too long ago. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a great opportunity. This is so exciting. It's the right people. It's the right thing. And as we got into that conversation, I was like, ah, shoot, this isn't it. This isn't it. So I'm gonna have to send you away. And you know, what comes around goes around in that perspective. When you have that kind of very buyer-centric thinking coupled with this understanding that sales is a craft and you never fully, you seek to become a master, but I think those of us who are in this position know that we'll never truly master this particular craft. Mm-hmm. You just continue to work on it. And so that continuing to work on it means that you have to be really aware of yourself, of your environment, of your buyer, of all of those dynamics. And you have to be willing and able to adapt to all of that. And so that's what I saw through the pandemic was the adaptation, mm-hmm. right? And so again, I don't think it was a very big change for top performers because they were already wired that way. And this was in a lot of ways just kind of a forcing function. I mean, shoot, one of the things that happened for me, particularly as I got thrown maybe the biggest curveball of my life in having to take our 2020 summit from an in-person event to a virtual event, mm-hmm. right? Completely changed my game. But adopting the mindset of, okay, well, how do we make this the best possible experience given these constraints? And as I worked with my team, we got to a point where we realized that every time we got thrown a curveball, it was an opportunity to not just overcome that particular hurdle or obstacle, but to level up again. Mm-hmm. And we got to a place where we looked forward to it. It was like, oh, you got that for us, do you? Okay, what does this mean? Like, how can we now take this and level up? And I saw that in a lot of top sales performers too. Like, okay, that's what you got for me. I can't go in the room and I can't whiteboard. One of just an incredible, fairly recent conversation I had with Irfan Jafar, who's at VMware. He's working on massive accounts, massive deals. And he was able to take their executive briefing, EBC, that's the word I'm looking for. He was able to take their executive briefing center process where they would typically bring big clients and their executive teams onto campus at VMware, turn that into a virtual process and recognize that, hey, our EBC only accommodates like a max of 18 or 20 people. Now I'm bringing 45 stakeholders from the same organization together, we're all getting onto the same page and we're actually moving deals faster, right? So it's that ability to adapt and recognize the opportunity in the challenge.
Completely agree with buyer-centric thinking. Buyers say that that's the most important thing that you can have. So if you do have that going in, I think that's a key characteristic to amplify. And then this whole growth mindset and the ability to evolve and adapt, Scott, I couldn't agree more that that has been the biggest characteristic I've seen for success through this, because through this crisis, it hasn't been just one stage, right? There are multiple stages and those stages are going to continue to evolve, right? As we come out of this, in certain aspects, like you said, with events, it's going to be like we're shot out of a cannon. You're going to have to even more quickly adapt to a now in-person capability that maybe is hybrid in some ways because some people couldn't get there. And so it's going to challenge the way that you've done it before in new ways. And I think those sellers that get stuck in legacy ways of doing things or get stuck in these patterns where every day is kind of the same, I think they're the ones that are going to be left behind through the process.
Yeah. And it's companies too, right? I mean, this is a cultural thing. And I think we're seeing companies that accelerated their growth because of this process. And there's companies that got crushed mm-hmm. because they just weren't able and willing to make those adaptations that you have to make.
Now, part of why we call us the Evolvers is hopefully our community is on, we have that mindset to continually look at what status quo is, break it, evolve to the next level. Sales enablement is a big part of the community here, Scott. And I know that you're not directly in sales enablement, but you're certainly enabled by sales enablement to do your job better, hopefully. How do we make sellers better in this new environment to achieve top performer status? What are some of the things you think that sales enablement should be looking at to get the middlers to be these top performers and have the characteristics that you're highlighting?
Yeah, I'm maybe a lot biased here, but I think that what salespeople appreciate hearing from the most is what other salespeople who are having success are doing, mm-hmm. right? So the more that you can bring those stories forward, those examples, whether it's inside your organization, it's outside of your organization, there's so much more credibility. I'm going to quote myself. I accidentally came up with this and I've come to really like it. I like to learn from what the doers do, not from what the sayers say.
Love it.
And along those lines, I've recently launched yet another podcast because I'm ridiculous. This one I don't host though. So we started a sales tech podcast, and we had Brendan Short on that show, who's at Zoom. And he has this incredible model that he calls the champs model. And he takes a seller and puts them in charge of essentially becoming the subject matter expert on a particular piece of sales technology that they've adopted, right? So let's say they've adopted Vidyard. Oh, okay. Well, we're using video in our process. And now they get an opportunity to go deep, to experiment, to collaborate with others on the team, to kind of see what they're doing and to bring the best ideas and the things that are working forward to the rest of the organization. And now it's the team collectively. It's not just one person who's in enablement, but it's the whole team working together that has ownership of this thing. And the more that you can get into the field, work with the sales team, and I don't want to spoil, I know where your next question is going to go, and I'll be able to make the rest of my point kind of there.
Absolutely. So I love this champs concept, because when I've asked analysts and when I've worked with our customers, the programs I've seen that are the most successful have an incredible group of experts or pilot where they have cut their teeth. They've learned how to optimize it within the organization, and then they're the ones that teach the rest of the organization. So I think if there's one piece of advice that we're taking out of this is, you know, learn from what the doers do, not what the sayers say. You can tell the sellers what to do until you're blue in the face, and you can show it to them over and over. But if they can learn from the successful sellers how to take advantage of this technology, like you said, if it's Vidyard, if it's a brand new point of view presentation that's maybe interactive, if it's a value selling tool, an ROI tool, make sure you've got champs. And I love that concept, champions, technology experts within the sales team that have used it, have become experts on it. And then they teach everyone else how to apply it successfully in the selling motion.
Yeah, and most importantly, have had success with it, right? I think that's the leap, because it's one thing to have the vendor say how impactful and how great this is going to be. It's kind of the same thing to have the marketing team or the enablement team tell the sales organization, this is how amazing this is going to be, and this is how impactful this is going to be, versus we've been using this in the team, and Scott was able to increase his close ratio by 20%. And I'm just going to let him tell you how he's doing that and how he's using that tool. That is a night and day different level of connection and understanding and validation of that story.
Absolutely. And then have them show you exactly how they used it and applied it within the motion, which is hard for a sales enablement person to do when they're not out there and in the process day after day. I think we learn a lot from, you know, failures, probably more so than successes. Where have you seen sales enablement go awry?
Sales enablement, in my experience, goes awry when that team is guessing what the sales team needs. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many irrelevant, white papers, decks, other materials have been built where there was no conversation. There was no eye towards, hey, the sales team said, we really need this. Like when I see enablement work well, it is a really strong partnership, right? Maybe the most important thing that enablement can be doing is getting on the sales calls, in every phase of the process, and really just watching and seeing and talking with the sellers, what's going on, and debriefing those calls, right? It's one thing to hear it. It's another thing to then say, wait, Scott, why did you do this? Or how did you hear that? Or why did you respond this way, you know, to that particular issue or challenge? And then working together to figure out, okay, now what can we do to close some of those gaps and fix some of those challenges and get ahead of some of these issues that we see coming up over and over and over again.
And I think that this is where, you know, having the meetings now virtual provides one of the biggest benefits that sales enablement could ever have.
Yeah.
Where now you can participate in so many more meetings and calls, and you can even go back and listen to those recordings and have those annotated by technology as well.
Exactly.
Even more insight, right? So there's really no excuse anymore for being kind of a back office enablement person anymore. You can be right out there seeing how the assets are being leveraged or not being leveraged. See where the stumbles are occurring. See how difficult it is for sellers to answer questions or not answer them by not having the right content there. See how hard it is for them to pivot to the next conversation with the presentation that you've given them, or see how the presentation is working, but how just a couple of minor improvements could really deliver the goods, instead of treating it as a content or enablement by the pound process, which we've seen certain organizations implement.
Yeah, please know. And you know, I think part of what you guys are doing is just measuring what's actually working, what's actually being used, is a really, really clear signal and sign. And like with anything, you're gonna find an 80-20 rule in effect. You know, there 20% of the stuff is driving 80% of the result and is getting 80% of the usage. And there's a lot of stuff that nobody uses that stuff. Why are you going to update that thing that nobody on the team has used in 6 months?
Yeah. And then even more so, I think, Scott, is this next horizon of, you know, a lot of the buying occurs not in that meeting, but beyond the meeting. So the ability to put together collections, portals, basically for the buyer, the buyer to be able to consume that content, share that content internally, and then to be able to track and see how they're using it or not using it, where they're struggling, what they're asking for that's not been provided, and being able to proactively provide it in the next three calls so the buyer doesn't need to ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's such valuable intelligence, right? Because I can tell by what you're consuming what you're worried about, right? Okay, now how do I need to prepare for this next conversation? Because you really seem to be wrapped around the axle on like the security and risk things that are going on within our platform, because you work for a highly regulated company.
Exactly. So you know then that maybe providing proactively more content in that area could be helpful, or at least diving in, or perhaps they're looking at three use cases where you could provide success stories to back up those use cases. All of that kind of insight and intelligence, I think, is that next generation of selling excellence that, you know, like I said, the rules that you went over with mindset, relationship, process, career, those are immutable laws, right? This is more kind of how do we bring selling into this next century? And I think that data and data-driven is going to be a key, and every seller being enabled with the insights of what the customer is doing and what the buying committee is doing, I think is going to be essential.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Evolver community with today, Scott?
I'm going to triple down on my theme and say, find the best and learn from the best. Like, find the people who are actually doing it. So, and in whatever that is, right? If you're in enablement, and find other organizations that are doing just an incredible job of enabling their teams, and talk to those practitioners about what they're doing and what's making the biggest impact, and about where and how they're falling on their face and maybe the path you don't want to go down, right? And then to take that one step further, right? It's one thing to consume that type of content, because I know there's a lot of it here on this podcast, Tom, right? I mean, you don't necessarily have to go schedule conversations. This can happen in your car or while you're working out, and you can just continue on your binge. But it's then thinking through those items and figuring out, how do you make them your own? Mm-hmm. How does this fit into your style, your approach, your organization, just the dynamics of the market that you're working in? You've got to make those adjustments, right? Because what I don't see, and this is another of those just very large insights from the top performers, is they have found ways to be the best versions of themselves. They're not trying to be the best version of somebody else, mm-hmm. right? They're leaning into their strengths, to their unique superpowers. And I don't think your role matters in the way that you do that, right? Like, really figure out, it comes back to kind of this awareness and understanding, what are the things that make me great? What are the ways that I can deliver the most value, and lean into that and just continue to pull in these nuggets from others who are doing it the best.
Awesome, Scott. Thank you so much. Where can folks find and reach you online? Tell us about your podcast, The Summit.
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is, actually, I've got a new landing page where you can get to everything. If you go to salessuccesseverything.com, we've put everything there. My favorite communication channels, you can send me an email to scott@top1.fm. That's the number one. Or LinkedIn's another great channel. Connect with me. Let me know that you heard our conversation here on the Evolvers podcast, and I'd love to chat with you.
Awesome. And can folks attend the Sales Success Summit even if you're not yet at the top 1%?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. All of the folks who take the stage are folks who've been on the podcast and are by definition at the top, but anybody is welcome to attend. And we do get a lot of sales leaders who are looking to just understand what is the makeup of these top performers. I've also got marketing and enablement folks that are looking at this as well, to just really understand, what do the best of the best actually do? How are they thinking? And the opportunity to interact and the experience that we build around it is a lot of fun. So I hope you'll check that out.
Awesome. Scott Ingram, thank you so much for joining us on the Evolvers podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
Awesome. Until next time, Evolvers, keep evolving.